We claim the spiritual comes first, that the soul matters more than anything. But do we really live like it? Don Bosco did, and his example might just unsettle you in the best way. Stay tuned. Ave mundi spes Maria. Welcome to Following Padre Pio. Whether you're joining us for the first time or returning, we're glad you're here. Especially because I have something special to share. On February 11th, the feast of Our Lady of Lourdes, your intentions will be brought to Lourdes and entrusted to Our Lady in prayer. All you need to do is enroll your intentions using the link in the description below. There's no cost, so don't miss this opportunity. Now let's move on to our story. Tomorrow, January 31st, we celebrate the feast of Saint John Bosco, priest, confessor, founder, and spiritual father to countless young souls. In honor of such an extraordinary saint, I want to share a profound reflection by Professor Plinio Correa de Oliveira. He examines a crucial and perhaps misunderstood principle in the saint's life: the absolute primacy of the spiritual over the material. The professor begins with a biographical scene taken from the book The Pedagogical Ideas of Don Bosco. It is undeniable that the personality of Don Bosco's mother influenced his upbringing. This woman, widowed at 29, profoundly marked the souls of her three children. She was poorly educated, but she possessed remarkable good sense. Her upright judgment, deep piety, unfailing dedication, and a firm, almost virile strength made her an exemplary educator. Work was a constant obligation in their home. Margaret subjected her children to all the activities of the house and the fields. From dawn in the summer and even earlier in the winter, the children began the day with prayer. Life is too short, she would say, to waste the best part of it. Fatigue was not considered. Meals always remained extremely frugal. At night, they slept on the floor. Later, when John went to the seminary, he took their acquired blanket with him. But on returning home during vacations, his mother made him put it away, considering such comforts useless and harmful. The professor comments, "I must point out to you that Don Bosco's family lived in the region of Turin, Italy, which is very cold. And this is how this exemplary woman raised her children. We will draw a conclusion from this later. Here you have a picture of the strong woman of the gospel, rising early, beginning her tasks, fulfilling all her duties, and whose worth is so great that one must go to the ends of the earth to find anything comparable. You see in this something profoundly different from the social outlook of the Christian Democrats. According to that view, someone who suffers hunger and cold is incapable of leading a spiritual life. Therefore, the beginning of spiritual life would consist in providing food, a bed, a warm blanket. Only then could one begin to speak about spirituality. From this, they conclude that the beginning of apostolate must necessarily be material action. So to convert the world, we would first need to eliminate underdevelopment. And ultimately, the fight against underdevelopment would become a specific purpose of the church. But then comes the contrast. Here, he continues, you see exactly the opposite. It is a home so poor that people have no beds. They sleep on the floor without blankets in a climate where winters can be harsh. Don Bosco bought a blanket for the seminary only because regulations required it. Their food was meager, their work was abundant. It was truly a poor life, but sanctified by a spirit of renunciation and sacrifice, one which helped form a man physically strong and resilient in every task as Don Bosco later became. You see how deceitful it is to claim that comfortable conditions are indispensable for the apostolate to flourish. Austerity is necessary. I go further. It should also exist in the highest social classes. In Europe, this was preserved until some time ago. Not so much for young girls, but especially for boys of noble rank who were raised in a rough way of life. I recall reading about a French duke exiled in London. Do you know how they woke up in the morning? Several princes shared a room. They all rose and jumped into the freezing Thames River. That is life. That is austerity. What forms the person and prevents softness. If our civilization had persevered, had preserved this spirit, much decadence would never have occurred. The professor then returns to the biographical note. Despite his intense workload, the founding of two religious congregations, building churches, establishing oratories, and preparing missions, Don Bosco devoted much of his days and nights to writing. With his pen, as much as with his word, he served the church, fought error, and consoled souls. A man of his time, he recognized the importance of a new modern giant, the printing press. His pen worked for 45 years, countering Protestant attacks in northern Italy with Catholic reading materials. The professor comments, "Here you see his sense of the moment. He was not a man who lived with his head in the clouds. Saints do not live in the clouds. It is certain hagiographies that present them as such. In reality, Don Bosco was a man who understood the problems of his time and confronted the enemies of his era. He fought, for example, the intense Protestant propaganda in Italy with an equally intense action in the opposite direction. Consider this further. People talk a great deal about Catholic works, and it is necessary to do them. But little is said about writing Catholic books. Why? Because more importance is given to the economic than to the spiritual. The work concerns the economic sphere, whereas writing belongs to the realm of the spiritual. No one understood the need for Catholic works better than Don Bosco. And yet, when we examine his life, he was more of a writer than a man of work. This proves that, in the thought of this great champion of the church, intellectual action was more valuable than charitable action." And with that, we conclude the professor's reflection. So as we celebrate St. John Bosco, let us ask for two graces. First, for the courage to embrace holy austerity in our own lives, rejecting the softness that undermines character. And second, for a clear-sighted understanding that our highest duty is to the spiritual and intellectual order, to know our faith, to defend it with clarity, and to never shy away from the battle for souls. Wishing you all a blessed feast day tomorrow.